Hey everybody, welcome into this episode of Sumo Brothers, Super Sumo Brothers podcast. I'm here with Andrew, as I will always be. And we're going to talk a little bit about the first half of the Basho. So we are the July Basho, that is. We are 8 days in, so Nakabi, the middle day. And we got a lot to talk about. So just to get started, you know, we're obviously big fans of Koto Shigiku, and he picked up a day two win against Chimaru, and going 2-0 to start the tournament, which is not uncommon. I don't want to call it uncommon, but in recent tournaments it's been a little tough for him to start. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think him getting out of the gate has been hard these last couple tournaments. But when he does get going, he does end up sticking with it. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, last handful of tournaments he's started, you know, 0-2, 0-4, and 1-1 in the last five tournaments. So to get him going 2-0, as you can see by his day eight results, getting started is a good thing for him.
Yeah, super. I think that's a big thing with sumo too, is I feel like starting out strong, like getting as much as you can in the bag in the first week, because obviously, you know, as you go along, you're going to be more tired, and you know, there's a potential for injury the farther you go. So the more wins you can get in week one, I think is far more more important than I think people think, I guess.
Yeah, because if you take those losses early on, that's all you're really thinking about is, you know, everyone is striving to get at least 8 wins and get that Makikoshi. But, you know, so if you take a couple early losses, now you're your back's against the wall. Like you're already in a deficit, you know, you're in a hole, you're trying to get out of it. So yeah, I think getting going and getting, you know, at least 4 wins in the first 8 days is really what they try and do. So you can at least maintain that 50% heading into the second week.
And it seems like I don't think there's actually a particular way they put the matches, like in terms of who you're fighting and what ranks. So, you know, week one, you could be fighting people above you or below you. But I think in the rank that Koto Shigiku's in, he'll be fighting, you know, most everybody who's above him, or at least even with him.
Yeah, and I think because right below him, since he's at Magashira 14 this tournament, there's actually a handful of guys who are in his own stable as well.
That was my thing too. Yeah, because you don't fight within your own stable in Sumo.
Correct. So. Yep. So yeah, you have 6 guys who could possibly below you. Actually, you have 7, including the your counterpoint Magashira 14 West. Mm-hmm. And 3 of those guys are people who are in your stable. So you're probably not going to, you won't be facing them. So you have the other 4 guys, but yeah, most of them will be above him.
Yeah. So big couple of wins for Koto Shigiku right out of the gate, which was awesome. Ikioi, who, you know, is I'm a big fan of, ended up just being 1-1. You have here that, he dropped 20 kilos. I personally didn't find that information anywhere, so I was wondering where you actually ended up digging that up. Did you just look, or?
I think it was either, it might have been a Twitter account that had tweeted out it, or it might have been on one of the broadcasts that were out there, that he did lose some weight. It's been on the fence of whether it's been a positive or a negative thing for him. I mean, through 8 days, he's 2-6.
Yeah.
And he's kind of been up and down in general of these last handful of tournaments, so it's really hard to determine. I mean, he won Juryo, I think, just a couple tournaments ago, but yeah, with the weight fluctuation, I think, you know, with COVID, everyone was trying to figure out, well, how are we going to train? Is it weight loss? Are you putting on more bulk? And I think for Ikioi, just if it is true that he did lose 20 kilos, then it probably hasn't helped him much.
Yeah, he's always been kind of up and down. Mm-hmm. He's been an up and down fighter. Since we've been following him, I think, and he's at Magashira 9 right now, so middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. And like you said, 2-6 after 8 days, so it'll be very tough for him to get 8 wins, but he'll likely be dropping back down to lower Magashira.
Yeah, I can see him being one of the early candidates that are probably going to get demoted. I mean, with two more losses in the next 8 days, I mean, it's likely that he'll be going down, and then it just depends on the number of wins that he gets, how far he goes down.
So. And he's fought, let's see, just out of curiosity, Shohozan, Kaisei, Mirugiru, Chiyotaru, Ishiura. Yeah. So guys around him, nobody crazy.
Yeah, he beat Kaisei and Ishiura, on day two and Kaisei on day five. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the fights are, I mean, the records for the rest of the people that he lost to besides, so he had Tamawashi, he's 6-2, and Niogiru, who's 6-2 and a part of the leaderboard. The rest of the guys have losing records. So
yeah, those are wins you got to be getting. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. As a veteran, I just think he should have, he should be winning these fights, and he's just not. So whether it has anything to do with the weight loss, like I said, if that's true, I don't know. I guess we'll have to find out for the rest of the tournament how he does.
Yeah, and he's going up against Koto Shoho on day 9.
And I mean, Koto Shoho has been putting on a display. I mean, he's the only true rookie in this July Basho. But he's fighting like he's a veteran. He's very tactical. He's very quick, and he's on the leaderboard right now. He's got two losses, so I don't know if he'll actually be there in the end. But we're only 8 days through, and like I said, a leaderboard really forms about now. And if you have more than three losses, you're probably off the board. So Koto Shoho is sitting there at 6-2. And just as much as in this as anybody else is.
Yeah, as long as Hakuho's in, there's always going to be you're going to be chasing the leaderboard. But
yeah, and Hakuho's sitting on top at 8-0, along with Asano Yama. You know, it's a great tournament so far.
Cool. Yeah. So that's like, there wasn't many notable things in the first few days. I feel like it was pretty standard sumo for the first couple of days starting out.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple things for people who might not be familiar with it or just wants to, you know, take a look at some of the other things that might be uncommon, not necessarily rare, but uncommon is, match length. You know, day two, if you have a chance to check it out, there's, you know, ways out there you can watch these videos. NHK does all the highlight videos, but like Takayasu and Shohozan had a longer than average fight. They typically go 3 to 5 seconds maybe. And this one lasted well over 10 to 15 seconds, and they get longer. And in the past, we've seen matches where, you know, if it goes too long, they actually just pause the match. They have them stand still. The Gyoji comes over, you know, the judge, he comes over, he measures out their foot placement, kind of take the visual picture of where their hands are and where the grip is, and then have them go back to their side of the ring and take a break and then come back. A day two fight, Shiomaru and Tamawashi. Monoe is it's a judgment call where they might have gone out at the same time, and then they have like a judge conference and bring them in. So yeah, first couple days, it wasn't a lot of things to be pointed out, but it's still early.
To go back to the Monoe thing, I just to kind of give people an idea, like at least when I first started watching sumo, I thought they just did it all by, you know, there's four judges around the outside of the ring. And, if it's too close to call and they don't feel confident in the judge's decision or the Gyoji, they'll all come up into the ring and they'll discuss. And I thought for the longest time that they weren't using replay footage.
I also thought that.
I thought they were just, the four of us get together and majority rules and we decide that. But apparently they are using a little tablet.
Yeah. It's like going to the review booth and like football.
Exactly. Yeah.
It comes up. I also thought that because sumo's been very like traditional. It's still kind of, a lot of the stuff they do is still like very in the heritage of it. So I also thought they were just going with, you know, what their eye saw. But yeah, no, they do use the tablet to check out replays.
I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't just done by eye, actually. I was like, oh, come on.
Especially when we didn't know that it was actually happening that way, where I was like, wow, that judge had like a great eye. Like, good on him for noticing that his heel hit down just before the shoulder did. Like, good on him. Yeah. Like, that's some good eyes right there. And then it turns out that, yeah, it's just a tablet that they're looking at.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But I think, and again, day four was pretty similar to the first few days. Nothing really notable. But then we start getting to day five. I think this is when You start getting an idea of who is who's on fire and who's feeling a little cold. Mm-hmm. At this point on day five, even in Juryo, it seemed like there were no undefeated Rikishi in Juryo, which is pretty rare this early in the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was definitely a thing that, you know, going into day five, you have at least someone who's undefeated. But
yeah, and you would think, like, I wonder if that has to do with, you know, maybe they don't have as much experience, generally speaking, as the Makuuchi division guys. Mm-hmm. So you may maybe the time off over the last, you know, missing the practices and things like that may have an effect on some of the younger, not to say everyone in Juryo is younger. We definitely know some of the Juryo guys have been up in Makuuchi before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I could imagine that would be a little more distracting if you're maybe not in the upper ranks. But it is, I was watching on day five and they were kind of zooming in on Koto Shikiku. And he, you know, he had his earbuds in, he's listening to music, and that actually made me wonder, like, what kind of music do sumo wrestlers in general really listen to? Mm. Like, do you listen to, like, crazy death metal music, or do you listen to, like, some calming meditative sounds, or, I don't know, it was just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if it could be, like, video advice, or maybe, I don't know if they do, like, you know, like, know your opponent kind of thing, where it's like, oh, this is, like, you're getting some pre-fight information on who the person is, or if they show, like, you know, it's like when a baseball player has a bad game and he goes back and checks the footage and he's like, okay, I'll do this next time. So maybe, I don't know, if he was listening to his, you know, potential trainer telling him, like, a previous
match
like that. Yeah, it's interesting to see if it's that or music, or,
you know, who knows. Yeah, it's very, because if you've ever watched sumo, they are very, I don't want to call it, like, meditative, but there's definitely a focus that kind of starts on the runway, like before they start walking down to the arena. They go through their routines. Mm-hmm. It's a little different than what you would see in, like, maybe a UFC fight, you know, where a guy's coming down and high-fiving people, he's walking down, or even just walking down really, really fast and being focused. It's like the fight kind of starts for that person the fight before, or a few fights before, as they're getting ready in the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting to see, because I don't really think I've seen that before.
No, I've never seen anyone, I think, listen to music. So that's why I'm surprised that was caught, or not even caught, but that it was seen. Because I've never seen anyone, like, listen to music. Most of the time they're, you know, down there, you know, working with their team or just getting ready.
So a fight that I saw on day five that I thought was pretty cool was the Takeyasu versus Terunofuji. Mm-hmm. I'm going to mispronounce his name a bunch. Fight. Takeyasu so basically in sumo, when you're going for, there's two different strategies that I would say most people stand by, and it's a pushing, thrusting effort, where you're just trying to push the guy, or, like, you know, bump him out of the ring, or you're going for a specific grip. So you're trying to grab the mawashi, which is the garments that the sumo wrestlers are wearing. And I you kind of pick up on the subtle, like, the pushing and thrusting, I feel personally, was pretty easy to pick up on. You notice those guys right off the bat, who's, like, Koto Shigiku, for example. I would consider kind of a pusher, thruster. And he kind of just pushes people out of the ring. Mm-hmm. But with Takeyasu, in fighting Terunofuji was going for a grip on the mawashi, and you could just slight movements of their hips, or, you know, like a sidestep to try and elude the grab, was pretty interesting. Yeah, I don't know if that's something you've picked up on more, like, as we've watched more.
It's funny, because I don't think I've seen that a lot with a lot of matches, but that one in particular, for some reason, I don't know if it was just because the camera was, like, square on the hips and that's just the way the match went, but I did notice that fight, and yeah, in particular, where Takeyasu was, like, and he knew that he was going for it, and he just kind of flicked his hip out of the way just a couple times.
Yeah, and I think he almost even kind of, like, let him get really close once, mm-hmm. and then just kind of shifted out of the way, knowing that he could, mm-hmm. to try and get Terunofuji off balance. It was just cool to see. It was something. I was watching it, and I'm like, I've been watching sumo for a good period of time now, and I guess I'm just now picking up on the nuances of going for a grip on a mawashi.
Yeah, and I want, like I said, I wonder if it's just because we never get that camera angle where we can see it. But
yeah,
the good thing about that was that ended up paying off for him, because that's the only loss that Taranofuji actually has is
Takayasu.
So yeah, no, Takayasu, I thought he had a really good fight, especially against Taranofuji, who's a former Yusho winner, former Ozeki, and he'll be back up there in no time.
Yeah, for sure. He's making quick work of everybody down there. So
yeah, I mean, he's sitting at 7-1. He's technically second on the leaderboard, tied with some other guys. But yeah, I knew this tournament was going to be easy for Taranofuji in general, just because he's fighting lower ranked guys. But I'm glad there's a little competition down there with some former Ozeki. So at least it's not a walk in the park for him. But so far, he's 7-1. It seems to be so.
Yeah, there's a lot of former Ozeki down there. So
yeah, Tochinoshin, Kotoshikiku, Taranofuji, and Takayasu. So I mean, they're all former Ozeki. So yeah, I'm glad to see that the bottom is actually a little competitive.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the bottom seems pretty good, the top seems really good. The Ozekis are fighting very well. Tournament. Not. I mean, Takakesho is 5-3. It's not perfect, but Asanoyama, is 8-0. And it's nice to see Ozeki's, fighting pretty well up there. We talked about that in a previous episode. Yep. But it seems like the middle is kind of a mess right now. You have Endo at Magashira 1 at 2-6. You got Magashira 2 Onosho at 0-8. Magashira 1 Yutakiyama at 0-8. So it's weird. If you're outside of the Senyaku, it's getting a little dicey in the middle. It's kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, it's like the bottom four are doing pretty well, and then the top four are doing well, and they're expected to do well. But yeah, like he said, I think in kind of my bigger surprise is Onosho being 0-8. And Yutakayama also being 0-8. I mean, they both have their Kachikoshi through 8 days.
Yeah.
And usually you try to get 8 wins. They can't get 8 wins. So they're two guys who are already lined up to get demoted, and they're only in day 8. So now they need to try and get as many wins to not drop as far down.
Yeah, now you're just playing. Again, this is kind of what we were talking about at the beginning there. It's like you lose all these matches in the beginning, then you're just kind of playing for your rank at that point. You're going down. It's just a matter of how far.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing that's good for Yutakayama is he's faced most of the Senyaku guys already. He's faced Takeomi and Asanoyama, Hakuho, Takakesho, Daisho. So they kind of fed him to the wolf early on.
Yeah.
So he could try and get some of those wins back, and maybe he finishes 5-10 and he gets dropped down to like 6 or 7 or something like that. But yeah, I mean, you work your way down the Banzuke, and there's a lot of break evens or below 500. But the bottom is where some of the leaderboards at Kotoeko, Kotoshokiku, Kotoshoho, Taranofuji. I mean, those guys are all 6-2, 7-1, and they're the bottom four ranks.
Yep.
I've never seen the bottom perform so well and the top perform also so well, but then everyone else is just 500 or so.
Yeah, it's definitely like a weird kind of slugfest in the middle of the pack right now.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe this is due to COVID and just, people weren't ready for this, and the bottom has some more veterans while the top also has some veterans, and there's maybe in the middle pack there's some people who are, aren't used to this. Like Ryuden's only been here for a while, for I think a little over a year. Abi's another one, and we'll get into him in a little bit. Taratsuyoshi's 500. Ishiura, another younger guy, 3-5. So yeah, who knows if these middle of pack records have anything to do with just the layoff that they had to go through.
Yeah, and even like the Sekiwake rank has been really good too. Shodai at 7-1 and Matakiumi at 7-1.
Yeah, and that 7-1 only happened in day 8.
Yeah, I was just about to say, up until day 5, Matakiumi was 5-0 and looking really, really good, fighting very strong.
Yep.
Asanoyama in day 5 looked really good against Karibayama.
Yeah.
Kiribayama. I don't know. I'm going to, again, Kiribayama. Yeah, there it is. I'm not super familiar with him. I never really followed him, so I got to get used to his name.
Yeah, no, he's been up for a couple tournaments, but he was, he's another newcomer to the Makuuchi division. He only came up in January, so he's got a 2020 fresh start.
It's definitely something I noticed with sumo too, is usually start with, you know, you follow one guy and then you kind of branch out, and even the more you branch out, you still don't know everybody. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know, I feel like it's pretty unique to sumo in that, yeah, you're kind of working backwards. You know, you don't like become a fan of, you know,
yeah, you really like, you become a fan of like the big name guys, and then kind of, and it's also like a revolving door too. There's always people being demoted and promoted, and mm-hmm. you know, this guy who's up this month, he may not be back for another year.
Yeah,
you know, that's just how things work.
And in sports that I follow too, it's usually like you pick a team,
yeah,
and then you start learning guys on that team,
mm-hmm. and then, yeah, they stick around guys for years, and
yeah,
you know, and you get to see him play, you know, every single or every other day or whatever, depending on what sport you follow, where you get used to these guys. But yeah, there's some names on here where like I recognize them, but when they came up, you know, is always a question, just because, you know, it's always a revolving door.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I mentioned the Asunayama fight on day five, as it was, you mentioned, we were talking earlier about longer fights. This was a very long fight. I would say close to 30 seconds, 45 seconds, maybe. Wow. That they were dancing the whole time and moving around, you know, they weren't really standing still. It was a really good fight. So it was good to see. I mentioned it too, because it was a tough fight for an Ozeki. It was cool to see it presented with a difficult challenge, and to kind of overcome that again at the Ozeki rank is it's harder than I would say almost any other rank. Mm-hmm. So it was cool to see a really solid fight from an Ozeki.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier with them, their numbers were good. Like, this is shaping up for consistency, which is my one wish that we talked about in the last episode is, mm-hmm. I'm hoping that this is like Asunayama. He was a new Ozeki this tournament, and he's already got his Makikoshi. Like, he mm-hmm. doesn't have to worry about going Karuban. He could lose his next seven and still be fine and finish an Ozeki.
Yeah.
I'd like to see double digits out of him, and I think easily at eight you can get that. He'll probably finish I don't think he's faced Takuho yet. No. Obviously not, because they're both 8-0. So he's still got a couple people that he's going to have to get through in order to get, you know, the 13 or 12 or 13 wins. Cause, I still think Haku has performed very, very well. There hasn't been any matches that I haven't looked at him and think that he's not going to win.
Haku has looked really, really good.
Yeah. I just want consistency is the big thing that I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I totally agree. And to kind of piggyback the Haku comment there, just like his ability. I watched obviously his day five fight, and I feel like he's the, and we've talked about this a bunch, obviously not on here, but just in general, his ability to switch gears mid fight is still amazing. It's, I don't know how to describe it to people who maybe haven't watched a lot of sumo, but it feels like some of these guys just get in a mindset and that's their strategy for the fight no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to push and thrust this guy out of the ring, and no matter what happens, that's my strategy.
Yep.
Hakuho may start with an idea, like, that he wants to start with fighting tactic A, but if tactic A doesn't work out, he can quickly switch to B or even C. I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, we've had the ability to be able to watch Tom Brady with the New England Patriots with American football, and for over the last 20 years, it's kind of like, you know, you read your opponent and you're like, okay, I have a game plan for what I'm going to do. And then you start to look and you're like, all right, now I'm going to have to switch it up, like snap the ball. I have to figure out what I'm going to do. They switch something and now I need to think about it like on the fly. And yeah, I think Hakuho can do that better than anybody else. And like you said, I think a lot of people just have like, they're like a one trick pony. They go in with their plan. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
And he definitely has the size and strength that obviously he's not too big. He's not too small. He's got a good reach, but not like the longest reach out of anybody. And he's super fast.
Yeah, he's a well-balanced wrestler. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got the height, he's got the proper weight, he's got the foot movement, he's, you know, he can think real quick. If anyone was looking to, like, anyone wrestling, you know, in the ranks, obviously you'd look up to Hakuho and see what he does and hope you're able to get even remotely close to the way he does things. But, yeah, he's something special.
Yeah, for sure. So again, speaking of size and weight, so we're getting into day six, and we had a little bit of, because there's no, for those who don't know, there's no weight classes in sumo. If you're, you know, 120 pounds, you may fight a guy who's 500 pounds, you know. So we had a few offsetting David and Goliath matches, we'll call them, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were two interesting ones, and this will always be a problem I feel like might be with Enho. And mm-hmm. Same thing with Ishiura. They're from the same stable. They fight with Hakuho. But I feel like their size disadvantage is always going to be an issue for them. Mm-hmm. And maybe they can make that up with their quickness, but sometimes I think there's guys that I always think that there's going to be guys that are too big for them. But, I mean, Enho beat Oyama without really any issue. And Oyama's a big guy. I mean, we're talking, I think Ichinojo, who's now down in Juryo, they were two of the bigger wrestlers in the top division. So for him to beat him was impressive. And we're talking about Enho, who's, you know, 266 pounds, and Oyama, I believe, is like almost significantly more than
I was
him.
Looking it up right now too.
Yeah, I mean, he's 424 pounds. I was trying to think if he was twice as much or a little bit less than that, but yeah, I mean, like Mike was saying, there's no weight class, so you really you know, you're really just fighting whoever, and see them on the ring together is funny, because
yeah,
that's small.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Yeah,
but then when you see him against someone larger than him, like that much larger, he's like, how did he shrink? Like, what happened? How does Enho look that much smaller?
Yeah, Kaisei is no tiny guy either. Kaisei is pretty big.
Yeah,
and Ishiura, I would say, has a more muscular build than Enho.
Yeah.
So I think he'll have a harder time than Enho. I feel like if they want to move up.
Yeah, I think Enho is a lot more technical, so maybe that's where the difference in their career will end up being. But they're both young, so they still have plenty of time to develop a new form.
Yeah, and they both train with the best sumo wrestler, and almost the best sumo wrestler in all of history. So, so I think they definitely are going to go far. I was watching the NHK broadcast, and the English commentators were talking about, you know, could he ever be Yokozuna, and it, you know, it was unanimous that they none of them thought that he could, but a rank like Sekiwake or Komasubi, he would probably settle in pretty well up there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it probably has to just do with consistency. And I mean, Enho's performed well so far, but I think he hasn't been consistent with
his
tournament records since he's come up. So yeah, and he's only broken even. He's had 9 wins twice since he's come up the top division. So he's got to get past that. You know, getting 3 tournaments of 9 wins, it isn't going to get you an Ozeki rank. Yeah. So he could settle into the lower.
He's super fun to watch. Like, regardless, if you're new or want to get interested in sumo, I would check out some of Enho. It's Enho. Check out some of his fights.
Yeah,
it's super fun to watch him, because it's the, you know, again, David and Goliath in many, many cases.
Yeah, and his he only started, I believe, in March of 2017. So he's got into sumo and then climbed his way up, and he's performed very well wherever he's sat at. But yeah, I think the consistency is not gonna. He doesn't have it where, I think, as of right now, at least, where he wouldn't make it to Ozeki, and definitely not a Yokozuna.
Yeah. So. Some other things that I took note of on day six was the Kotoshikiko match, actually, against Tochinoshin. So Tochinoshin is a very large man from Georgia, the United States Georgia, but the country. And he and Kotoshikiko had a few what's it called? The easiest way
they're,
to think
they're,
about
they're them Mata. They're, Matas. They're, it's, yeah, it's essentially like a false start.
False start, yeah. That's the easiest way to think of it. And I think a lot of it was actually attributed to Koto Shigeyuku's new kind of stretching that he's doing before the Tachiai.
He has looked like he's been going lower. And it is weird because maybe he's done it the whole time and I've just never noticed it. But for someone I've been following for so long, there does feel to be something different.
He stretches his legs out, actually, is what I'm talking about. I don't know if you noticed it.
No, maybe I didn't.
It's like, yeah, it's he kind of A-frames in a sense. Like he stretches, he's just going down to touch his toes before he even puts his hands on the ground. And then he puts one fist down and then kind of waves the other hand. Yeah. And I think that was what was throwing Tochi Noshin off, was that he was, because before both fighters can Tachiai or go at each other, both fighters need to have their fists or hands on the ring, and then they can kind of go at each other. Otherwise, it's a mata or a false start. So he kind of is like feigning, like touching the ring. And I don't know. I just thought it was weird. Yeah. I'd never seen him do something like that.
Yeah, it could be contributing to the fact that he is 6-2 so far, that he's getting a little bit of a quicker. But yeah, I mean, he's and the judges are really good at noticing if you don't get that second hand down. But it could just be like, yeah, like Tochi Noshin has both of his hands down, Koto has one down, and then he kind of scrapes the other one. Mm-hmm. He is touching. That is legal to do what he is doing.
Yeah, yeah. So
it doesn't have to be like bare knuckles down, full contact. It can be, you know, I'm just going to touch my knuckle and then go up. But yeah, so there is some, it could be the reason that he's 6-2 so far.
And I think it's, again, this is something that you'll notice after you watch sumo after you pick up all the little nuances and gamesmanship and stuff like that. Tochi Noshin was definitely taking exception to what Koto Shigeyuku was doing in that fight, with the matas. There ended up being three. The second one, it looked like Tochi Noshin attempted a henka, which is essentially when you're going for the tachiai or when you run into each other, one of the fighters kind of steps aside and lets you just kind of pass on by.
Yeah, and that's usually a step to the side with like no effort to make body contact really at all. It's funny because I don't know if it's actually an official ruling a henka, where they'll give credit for something, whether it's like, you know, he touched him on the back and that's enough to be considered a different move, because sumo has dozens and dozens.
Hundreds, of, I think, yeah, even, yeah.
Yeah, of ways that you could possibly win, where there's tons that we haven't even seen yet.
Yeah.
And we've been following it for 10 years. But yeah, I don't know if Hank is technically a ruling, but it is something that, you know, some people seem to be okay with. I personally hate it.
I'm not a fan of the Hank at all.
Man. Yeah, and like, you know, we've had, like, I think Taro Nofuji's had a history of doing henkas to Koto when they were both Ozeki. You know, Abi's done it to Koto Shigeyuku as well. Maybe I'm just recognizing it more on people that I follow and I like to follow. And but it seems like Koto Shigeyuku gets henka'd quite a bit. And he doesn't henka back.
Yeah.
Like, there's never been a time where I can remember that he's attempted a henka. And
yeah, not that probably, I can remember. I'm sure once or twice. I feel like almost everybody does it probably once or twice. But I mean, the argument always, people who are for the move is, you know, you have to expect the henka.
But I
don't agree with that, only because I feel like one of the most exciting parts about sumo is when the two wrestlers come together, you know, in the tachiai in the beginning.
Yeah, I think there has to be some kind of contact in order for it to be like a legit fight. But yeah, with a henka, it's, you're pretty much just sidestepping him, and there's no shoulder to shoulder. There's no, you know, like, even Enho was like, I'm going to go low and grab your leg and then trip you. Like,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't have to be like chest to chest contact, but some form of contact where, like, even a sidestep to the side, and when you're like, you're sidestepping, but at the same time, you're kind of twisting in to grab the mwashi and throw him down, like something.
That's kind of what Enho did in day six, actually. Yeah. That's my next thing that I listed here is it was like a henka light is what I called it. It was, he sidestepped, but on the way by, he kind of grabbed the guy's mwashi and like helped him to the ground.
Yeah.
There was like a little bit of shoulder contact, but I think that's where the divide comes with some people. I wouldn't really even consider that a hiccup personally.
No, but that's the hard thing, is there's that gray area where, what do you consider a hanker? But yeah, that's I'd consider that to be hanker light, like you said, where, you know, it's still technical. He did make an effort. It's the complete sidestepping, and this individual is no longer in wrestling. He retired, I think, last year. But like Amanishki, for both of us, has always been like infamous for hankers. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to see clear cut hankas, as much as we don't like them, some people like them, and like you said, it's part of what sumo provides. And you know, not everyone does it. It's sometimes a desperation act. Like if you're, you know, if you need a desperate win, you'll hanka, and it's, I think it's kind of cheap. But
yeah, and I mean, it's another part to me that it kind of bothers me a bit too, is that people see it as, you know, like a dishonorable thing for, say, a Yokozuna to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I've seen Hakuho hanka.
yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's,
yeah, I don't think anyone's off limits to really do it, and really, it's maybe it's when they do it. Is it bad? Like, I'd hate to see like a hanka on like a day 15 tournament match against another Yokozuna. Like mm-hmm. imagine back in the day if it was like Haruma Fuji versus Hakuho, and mm-hmm. Hakuho hankered him. It's like, yeah. I'd hate for it like a tournament to be decided that way.
And sometimes it's used to send a message, which is another cool part about sumo. You know, like you mentioned the Patriots earlier. I'll bring him up again, since I know everyone will be thrilled with that. Mm-hmm. But you know, Bill Belichick calls this ridiculous play at the end of the game, you know, to send a message.
Yep.
It's almost like one of those kind of deals, mm-hmm. Where, you know, maybe somebody, this particular wrestler hankered somebody in his stable.
Yeah.
So then he's gonna hank you know, him back. Or he'll do it. He won't do it that tournament, but he'll get you back two tournaments from now, you know, when you really need the win or something like that.
And there might have been a chance that we saw that happen, because the next day seven, mm-hmm. Kotoweko went against Tochi Noshin, obviously closer ranked, so they would fight. And there was something about that fight that Kotoweko must have he had that fight where it was like, you did something yesterday to one of my stable mates, and I'm going to put a little bit more effort into this fight to make sure that I get this win.
Yeah, it definitely felt like the Kotoweko fight had a little more behind it than mm-hmm. than just him trying to beat Tochi Noshin.
Yeah, there was it wasn't just, you know, I'm going to fight this guy. It was more like, I want to beat you because of what you did to my stable mate. And Kota Shibiku being the senior in the house, you know, it's, you fight for everyone in your family, but also for yourself. But yeah, that fight has something, a little something else there.
Yeah. And the big news, I guess, of day seven was the whole Abi debacle.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I liked Abi a little bit when he came up. I thought he had potential because he was very long. He's very, very, he's got very long legs.
It's like gangly, for lack of a,
he has very long legs, which allowed him to create like a good amount of distance from someone and just slap him silly, like just push him right out of the ring. And you notice that, but you know, I don't know if it's because he's young or if it's just because he just doesn't care. But I mean, so for those who don't know, you know, Abi apparently went out to dinner, which during COVID, you know, you're not supposed to do, and even sports here in the US, like there's very, very strict rules about who you can socialize with during this time in order to keep the sport going. But Abi went out. I don't know if he got caught or when he actually went out, but he did go out to dinner with somebody, which you're not supposed to do during the tournament, during COVID at least. And he got caught. So he was being tested. And then, you know, now his stable master he's pretty much shut him down for the rest of the tournament. And this is as of day 8. So if anything changes, you know, that's something that's new knowledge. Mm. But yeah, I don't know if it's immaturity because, I mean, he had an issue last year too.
Yep.
And, you know, that caused him to lose social media access. You know, we won't go into the details. So if anyone wants to go check it out, but yeah, because I don't want to discuss any of the details, but, you know, you can go check out, just do Abi sumo and then social media, and it should be one of the first couple articles on Google or wherever you search. But yeah, it's unfortunate because, you know, if he went out and he gets somebody sick and then he's fighting and people in his house can't fight, and like your one act of selfishness could cost the rest of the tournament, you know, your stable mates, and who knows.
Yeah.
It's a disease that we don't know much about right now and who it affects and what, but yeah, he's taking a chance that he shouldn't have, and you know, he's going to pay for it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because there's all kinds of there seems to be a new sumo scandal every 6 months or something.
Yeah,
seemingly, but
yeah, the last handful of years, there's been at least one that yeah, because I think 2018 or end of 2017, pretty much the beginning of 2018 was the Haruma Fuji incident, and then yeah, we had Abi last year, and then Abi again this year.
So yeah, it's there's always seems to be something going on in the sumo world in terms of sports drama every so often. So yeah, it's unfortunate to see that again. And I, yeah, obviously, like he's a kid, and kids are gonna make poor choices.
And the details are still very vague. So yeah. I mean, we're only going on what we know. You know, obviously, there's no coverage here, so most of these, you know, the breaking news that we get here are through, you know, Twitter accounts or things like that that we follow that translate stuff from Japanese and English and then report them local.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. So, day seven does go on, without Abi.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up Ikioi again. We talked about him earlier. But this is kind of what we're talking about with him being a little bit of an up and down wrestler. It was a really good fight. He was in control for most of the fight, honestly. He was, you know, had him on the – had who did he fight? I'm forgetting the name. 1 second, I will find it. But he was – you know, he's in control the entire match and then just made one misstep and he loses it. And it was a pretty long fight. It was against Shohozan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Magashira 12, that's a win – you know, Shohozan's one
two
of his
six. Yeah, yeah, he's 2-6 now, so that's one of those wins that you should have.
Yeah, we should definitely have that. And again, he was in control the whole time, and you know, it just stinks to see that happens a lot in sumo. It's not just him, obviously, but yeah, that's a really tough part. It seems to be is actually like there's just that small bit of extra effort that I think sometimes needs to be put in to, you know, make that guy take that little extra step or, you know, shift a certain way. And if you just put a little bit more effort in, not necessarily effort, effort's not the right word. I mean, more, I don't know, just like staying a little more focused and not stopping the fight until it's 100% over.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think a lot of those close matches is, you know, one wrestler thinking that it's over because the momentum of the other wrestler is going out of the ring, and then all of a sudden he stops, turns around, and, like, pushes him out. I think a lot of them, it's that thinking the fight's over and it's not, and they stop pushing or they, you know, think, yeah. So,
yeah. So that was the Ikioi fight on day seven. And again, a similar fight with Shodai and Oyama on day seven.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of effort, but it was a really good fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then that leads us into day eight, where we currently are at. We got a pretty good idea of the leaderboard now, but I think my biggest takeaway from day eight here is that Asano Yama is 8-0, like we talked about.
Yeah, I want consistency, and I'll say it again, and I'll continue to say it, because back to those good old Ozeki days, that's what I loved. So having him be a new Ozeki, and I don't have to worry about him, at least for now, he's 8-0, he won't be demoted, he won't be Karuban, you know, no chance of demotion, he can go into September, no problem. Yeah, I'd like more wins out of him, obviously. But yeah, I mean, we pretty much know what the leaderboard is looking like now, with Hakuho setting the pace and Asano Yama also at 8-0.
Yeah, and I'm very curious, because injury seems to be the biggest issue with a lot of guys who get up into Ozeki or even Yokozuna or any of the upper ranks, really. But Ozeki specifically, because there's so much weighing on you getting your 8 wins every time as an Ozeki.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's where, like, you know, Asuyama has his 8 now, so that's great.
So if he does get injured or anything like that, he doesn't have to worry about demotion.
Yeah, and if he does get injured, I wonder, like, that's going to be his real test at Ozeki, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an off tournament, if for some reason you may not even just necessarily be injury, maybe you start out poorly, you go 0-3 the first couple of days, first few days. Being able to come back and, you know, maybe even put up like a 12-3 or something.
Yeah, the bounce back as an Ozeki is always the thing to look forward to. Is, you know, even if, let's say, he only gets 8 wins and he loses the next 7, how is he going to feel next tournament? Is he going to come back with 13 wins? Is he going to remember that 8-7 and it's going to drag him back to another 8-7? But yeah, I'm always interested to see. I like consistency, but the bounce back, I like to see what happens.
Yeah, and I think like Mataki Yumi is still up there. So Hakuho and Asanoyama, the only two with 8-0 yep. right now, which is Hakuho's 50th 8-0.
Yeah,
which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I don't know where that stands, but I saw that stat and I was like, wow, that's really impressive, because to be undefeated even through like 5 days is impressive, but to get through 8 days and, you know, get your Maki Kochi and everything's fine, it's impressive to have it 50 times.
To give you an idea, I mean, we mentioned a few wrestlers that were 5-0, and you know, and we were impressed by that.
Yeah.
So,
to think about it, so they only have 5 tournaments a year. It's 6, right?
Yeah. 6, yeah.
So it's in, you know, to do it 50 times, I mean, that's like 8 years worth of 8-0s to just start. Like, it's really impressive. Obviously, that's why we named him the GOAT last time.
Yeah, and he's not fighting pushovers either, Hakuho. No. He's fighting top guys. You know, Okunomi, who is sitting at, get the Banzukei up here. Okunomi, who's Komusubi, so he's 1 rank above Marushiro 1.
Yep.
You know, he's fighting Kagiaki, Takara Fuji, Onosho, Takanosho, Endo. Like, these guys are all upper rank guys, obviously. Yeah. I mean, he's Yokozuna. He's only gonna fight guys that are lower than him, but
correct. You know, yeah.
They're not gonna give him it. That's the Yokozuna life.
Exactly. And you know, some of those guys haven't been performing the best. But like Endo can be a surprise. You know, sitting at 2-6 though, it's kind of a disappointment. Onosho being 0-8, like I said, is very disappointing. But yeah, it doesn't matter when Hakuho has to fight everyone and ends up like he'll have to fight Asanoyama. And I feel like if it continues to be 11-0, 12-0, 13-0, it's going to be a Hakuho versus Asanoyama day 14-15 prediction.
Yeah, they're gonna hold that till the end, yep. Especially without Kakaru in the correct. Picture.
Yeah, because normally it'd be like Yokozuna versus Yokozuna day 14 or 15, and I think right now it's lining up to be, you know, a Hakuho versus Asanoyama unless either of them loses a match, that's probably what it's going to be, Dave. 13-15, someplace in there when the leaderboard's pretty much figured out.
Yeah. I mean, either of them losing the match is going to make things very interesting. If Asayama and Hakuho lose, that opens up the leaderboard quite a bit, as long as Shodai, Mitake Yumi, and Terada Fuji can keep going.
Yeah, and I think right now, out of that group of 7-1, I mean, I'd put my money on Terada Fuji just because he's going to have the easiest competition, but he will get, like, if he goes 11-1, 12-1, and heads into day 13, 14, 15, they'll throw him to Hakuho. I mean, he's fought him before, too, so it's not like that's going to be a new face, but there's a chance that, you know, maybe Terada Fuji at Magashira 17 East has to fight Mitake Yumi.
Yeah, I mean, that's – did they – let me look at this real quick. Back in the January Basho.
Tokushoru.
Tokushoru. Did they ever make him? Oh no, but Hakuho pulled out and so did Kakaru in that tournament.
Yeah, but they did end up facing Takakesho on day 15, who was an Ozeki.
Right.
So they did give him to the top ranked guy at the time. So in this case, if everyone remains healthy, and let's say Hakuho does lose one, it could be a Terada Fuji versus Hakuho fight heading into day 14 or 15 once the leaderboard's a little bit more figured out.
That would be pretty interesting.
And like I said, I mean, they've faced each other in the past. Terada Fuji, being a former Ozeki, having won a Yusho, has obviously had experience with Hakuho. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are some of the matches, for those aren't familiar, that they love to hold on to as those, hey, you know what? You're both 11-0, 12-0. One of you guys are going to lose right now. rather than maybe saving that for like a day 15 and decide all kind of fight. They like to put people who are undefeated against each other, and they can dictate the schedule however they want.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, typically we know at least one day out, sometimes two, but towards the end of the tournament, they only put out one. If they do, maybe it's like super late so that no one really knows.
Yeah, it's kind of strange how the whole system works. It's
yeah. I picture it like everyone just kind of sitting in a room and being like, all right, who do we want to put Hakuho up against in day 14? Who's looking like a contender? Which it makes things interesting though, because if it was strictly like, you know, Hakuho full face, no lower than Magashira 6. Well, then, you know, whatever. But if there's someone performing well enough, and, you know, we talked about this last episode with like the strength of schedule, then it makes sense to put someone, you know, who's performing well up against them. Let's give you a real competition. Let's see how you perform against a Takakesho or a Shodai.
Yeah, they definitely put people up against people with matching records. That's pretty common too, actually.
Yeah.
I've seen that a bunch. Like, let me look for the example here. So tomorrow, or I guess today in Japan, Tamawashi 6-2 is going up against Kotoshikiku 6-2. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of 3-5s going against each other, like Chiyotaru and Ryuden, 3-5, both going against each other. You know, and part of that is, you know, dictated by the, you know, just where things are laid out in the ranking system. But I think they do that a lot to create some drama.
Yeah, because even Tamawashi at Magashira 9, it's not a super stretch for a Magashira 15 to fight, and he would eventually fight that. But yeah, they're both 6-2. They're both on the leaderboard. Let's see how day 9 goes.
Yep.
Yeah, because, I mean, as it stands right now, as of day, your 8-0 is obviously Hakuho and Asanayama, 7-1 Shodai, Mitakeyumi, which I am super stoked about and super pumped because I want Mitakeyumi to perform well. Mm-hmm. He's one of my spotlight sumo. Tarnofuji 7-1, and then 6-2, which, you know, good for the Sadagatake stable. You have Tamawashi at 6-2, Miyagiru, but then you have three of the five Sadagatake guys. You have Kotoshigiku, Koto Shoho, who I mentioned before is performing like a vet, and then Koto Eiko, who is performing very well too. I think I'm probably most surprised by him because he's been a little inconsistent, but I'm glad to see that he's up there at 6-2.
Yeah, they're making him go up against Miyagiru, who's Magashira 10, so that's six ranks.
Yep, and that's also that's also a 6-2 guy. So yeah. Once again, they're trying to figure out, they have two groups of two in the 6-2 group fighting on day 9. And once again, that's to figure out who's real, you know, who's going to move on to 7-2, who's going to be part of the leaderboard still. I think they're trying to thin it out right now. And that's really the perfect way to do it is, hey, you know what, we'll stick them against each other and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, just to mention the other Sadagatake guys, Konan Iwaka actually injured himself on day 7. He had a left knee injury, so he pulled out.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know the severity of it. I don't know if it's just, you know, let's just take it easy for day 8 and see how it goes, but Tochinoshin got a walkover win, and that's unfortunate. And Koto Yuki is performing bad, where I think
he's having a rough go. He's 2-6. There's a lot of 2-6 guys right now, but at Magashira 17.
Yeah. And the thing is, he'll get some Juryo guys. So
yeah, he's about to fight a Juryo 4.
Yeah. So he'll get a guy who's probably about even, because that's how most of Juryo is right now, is a little at 500 or even. You know, no one's really performing well down there with the exception of Wakamoto Haru, who is
good job on that name. That was really
cool. I'm actually super excited to have him come up. One, because it's cool because his brother Wakataka Kage is also up in the up, and they're actual, I believe they're legitimate brothers like you and I. Mm-hmm. So it would be cool to have a set of brothers in there. And I think we've seen that in the past, like going back in like the 80s and 70s, there's actually been like some brothers that fought together.
They're in the same stable. I haven't been following them.
Yep. So they're the same stable. And the funny thing is, Wakataka Kage is actually the younger brother in this scenario. So he actually had two of his older brothers where his, the people that walk around and take care of his gear and all that. So it was funny to see the younger brother, have his older brothers do all of his,
is tradition in sumo.
Yeah. But yeah, Wakamoto Haru is 7-1 currently. He's top of the Juryo leaderboard. and there's Mito Ryu, who's 6-2, and then there's 8 other guys who are 5-3.
I wonder how that, I mean, obviously, if they come up to the Makuuchi division and win, I'm assuming that goes towards their win total in Juryo. I just wonder how that's weighed, you know, in making the schedule. You know, like of this, Daimami is coming up in Juryo 4. He's no stranger to the Makuuchi division.
Mm-hmm.
He's been up. So I'm just wondering, like, how much are they going to weigh that? You know, if he ends up going 8-7, but one of his wins comes from, you know, beating somebody in the Makuuchi, would that be enough to push him up to like Juryo 1 or maybe even Magashira 17?
Yeah, I feel like that might weigh, but it's always so hard because that lower portion could be new guys who might have been in Juryo previously. And yeah, I think we've looked at this with the strength schedule going back to that again. I think it does matter how much. I'm not really sure, but yeah, I could see him, like, if he does go 8-7, that he just gets bumped up a little bit. But like, yeah, 9-7, you know, maybe he gets bumped into 17, but it also depends on who comes down. Where, like, the bottom, like we said, the bottom is looking really good.
I just don't think there's going to be a ton of room at the bottom of the Makuuchi division.
No, and that's why, because even, like, let's say Shohozan goes on to perform poorly, and he, you know, he, if he goes 2-14, maybe he gets dropped out and that opens up a slot, but they try and keep it really at 17 or at 16. Mm-hmm. But these last handful, there's been 17 just because people have been performing so well, you know, below them and then breaking even above. But yeah, as of right now, I don't know if there will be any open slots unless some of these lower ranked people have like colossal meltdowns, or, you know, like Shimano only at Magashira 11. Like if he goes 2-13, not 2-14, maybe he drops down in the Juryo.
Yeah. Be interesting to see. So now that we've had the first 8 days, actually, before we jump into that, I just wanted to bring up one more thing, which is kind of like a congratulations in regards to Kodo Shikiku.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're obviously big fans. But he's now, as of today, or yep, as of day eight,
yeah.
He is in sole possession of the 6 most wins in the Makuuchi division.
He's actually tied with Kasino Sato.
Tied with Kasino Sato, right.
Yep, at 714 wins. So this tournament alone, he passed Haruma Fuji, a former Yokozuna, and the same thing with Kasino Sato, another, or he will pass with at least one more win in the next 8 days. He'll move into sole possession of 6th.
Yeah.
And you know, good on him. He's pretty much been like an Iron Man. I was taking a look back at his numbers even before we started watching him, and he's been pretty consistent. He's not pulled out of a ton of tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've probably seen Hakuho pull out of more tournaments than Kodo Shikiku. I don't know if that's just, you know, Hakuho has the freedom to do so as a Yokozuna and being the greatest that no one's going to question it. Or if it's, you know, just Kodo Shikiku's had a pretty good, healthy career. But yeah, I mean, he's been fighting since 2005, and to move up into, he'll probably break top 5 if he continues to fight. Mm-hmm. I want to see him fight for the next 5 years. But who knows what injuries or just career choices could come, where he may have to, retire or anything like that. But I could see him moving into potentially 5 by the end of the year with a couple other good tournaments, if not early next year. But yeah, congratulations to him.
Yeah, for sure. And just to give you an idea, everyone else in the top 10 except for Hakuho is retired right now.
Correct.
So for one reason or another. So it's the only two active wrestlers with most wins in the Makuuchi. You're up there with Hakuho. It's pretty good company.
Yeah. Exactly. If you go by your active leaders, it's Hakuho at 1 with 1,066, and I honestly don't see anyone catching that because the guy behind him has 879.
Yeah.
So, and that 1,066 was prior to this tournament, so you add that 8, and it's 1,074. And no one's going to catch him, and no one's on the radar right now unless some young guy comes up in the next couple of years.
Mm.
That's going to be a record that's up there. That's probably not going to get touched. But, yeah, good on Kodo Shikiku.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, now that we have 8 days of matches here, what do you so you want to change? So I think on our first recording for this tournament, we had picked out a few guys that we think we're gonna do well. How do you see your guys? I don't remember exactly who we picked out, but I know Ikioi was one of mine, and it was going to be interesting to see how he would do with some off time, and he's obviously not doing so well. But is there anybody here who you're kind of surprised by in this current situation?
I mean, positives and negatives. So I'll start with a little positivity. I'm really excited about Takeomi being 7-1. Like I said, mm-hmm. I wanted him to perform well. I've liked him for several years now. He's a former Yusho winner. I think he's won twice. So he's capable of winning. He's able to, and he's looked really, really good. The last handful of matches, I think the first couple days, there was a few that could have gone either way. So he might've been like a 5-2 right now, or a 5-3, but no, he's looked good these last couple days. So that's good that he's sitting at 7-1. The success of the Sadako Taki stable, I guess, overall is what I'm really excited about. Like I know Kota Nawaka pulled out, so he's sitting at 4-4 right now through 8 days. He'll, he'll get his first withdrawal technically on day 9. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kota Shoho, Kota Shogiku, Kota Waco all being on leaderboard through 8 days is amazing. So good on all of them. Some of the negatives, Ono Sho, 0-8. Takayama 0-8, like I said.
And Ono Sho is definitely better than what he's doing right now too.
I've always been a big fan of his as well.
He's always been at least consistent. He's not like the best
correct
wrestler out there, but he's always been entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and he had an injury a couple years ago where he dropped down a little bit and then came back up. But yeah, he's at 0-8, that's definitely not who he typically is. And, it's going to be unfortunate that he's going to automatically get a demotion. We'll just see how far he falls down.
Yeah.
But, yeah, other negative thing, it's just the Abby scandal. Or, the details are still very vague right now, so who knows. I don't think it's not really a scandal, but he went out when he shouldn't have. And, the thought in the back of your head is, I hope he doesn't come back positive and, he got these other people sick because he made a selfish decision. He just, couldn't even just wait until the tournament was over. Mm. But yeah, so those are my positives and negatives from.
Yeah. And just to follow up on a no-Sho too, I was just looking at who he beat last tournament in March. And he beat Mataki Umi. He beat Hakuho. So he's no pushover. He's very good.
Yeah. He's got the ability, and that's why I'm kind of surprised that he's 0-8. Cause he hasn't really faced, he's gotten the lower Senyaku and he got Hakuho. So he's actually gotten most of the Senyaku, but even at 0-8 and you didn't pull off, two or three wins in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed, but he's got Itakeyama, who's also 0-8. But once again, that's a same record guy going up against the same record guy.
Yeah. Somebody's going to get a win.
So. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to give either of you guys a win just so you get a win. And we'll see who goes to, 1-8 and the other one goes to 0-9.
That's yeah. Gonna happen. Yeah. And so, I guess for mine, so positive stuff, I've been surprised, not really necessarily surprised is not the right word, pleasantly surprised, I'll go with, I guess, on Shodai, actually, at Sekiwake, 7-1, he's fighting Mataki Umi, who is also Sekiwake. Oh, excuse me, sorry, that's a mistake, that was day 8, they fought on day 8, and Shodai gave Mataki Umi his first loss. Mm-hmm. Yep. But he's performing very well at Sekiwake. He was 8-7 Sekiwake in March. Magashira 4, he was 13-2 in January. Mm-hmm. November going back, Magashira 10, 11-4. So he's been ramping it up. He's been up as high as Magashira 4, 3 actually, where he had a losing record at 4-3 back in September and July of last year. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see him fighting well. He's beat, again, a lot of the guys around his rank.
And I think a big thing with Shodai's record right now sitting at 7-1 is he's potentially in line to maybe get an Ozeki promotion. Mm-hmm. Typically it's 33 wins over 3 tournaments, and between January and March, he was sitting at 21. So if he gets 12 wins, that might be enough to get him in to be an Ozeki, just getting that 33. You know, if he gets, you know, if he wins at with a 13 or a 12, yeah, that might guarantee him an Ozeki spot. But he needs to win five more, and they'd at least consider him for an Ozeki promotion, just, you know, but when they factor that in, they have to kind of look at who they're going to put into the spot below him or who's going to replace him. I mean, they won't prevent him from going to Ozeki because of that, but you know, if he gets 33 wins over three tournaments, there's a chance we could have another Ozeki in September.
Yeah, and Mataki Umi keeps going as well. I mean, he's 7-8 in January. March he was 10-5, so he's a little farther behind. But
yeah, but if he puts together, you know, I think even with the rest of it going perfect, I don't think he'll have enough for the 33. Unless he wins, they might.
Unless he wins, he'd have to beat Hakuho to do it.
Yeah, a win they weigh heavily, especially if they, like, the tournament win would be weighed heavily in the decision, and the same thing with who you beat to win the tournament. So yeah, if it was like Hakuho versus Mataki Umi, both, you know, 13-1 heading into day 15, and he beats them, they might let him in there with 31, 32 wins.
Shodai, I think, obviously, is the better shot. Which would be cool. Yeah, I mean, we've kind of been, you know, I wouldn't say like diehard fans of Shodai, but we've definitely followed him since he's kind of gone up into the Michikuchi division. Mm-hmm. So that would be cool to see him up in the Ozeki rank.
Yeah.
And if he could, again, provide some further stability up there, that would be awesome. Taka Keisho, despite his losses, I feel like he's been fighting pretty well.
Yeah, the big thing for him is he needs to make sure he gets his 8 wins, because he's Karuban. So
he's Karuban, yeah.
But yeah, three over the next 8 days probably shouldn't be too hard for him.
He hasn't fought Hakuho yet, so that's probably,
that's probably a loss, unfortunately.
You gotta figure that's a loss, so... but he's got plenty of time. He's fighting Enho, who's been wishy-washy this tournament, mm-hmm. for sure. To kind of backpedal a lot with Enho, he's been getting caught in this weird crouching position that people seem to be successful, you know, against him. We've talked about how short he is. Mm-hmm. But right off the Tachi-ai, but in the fight that I'm thinking of, I think it was on day 5 or 6, he goes to the Tachi-ai and immediately ends up in like a weird crouching position and just gets pushed down. I believe the other instance I'm thinking of was earlier in the week, but it was like a fight that was just kind of going on. He tried to backpedal a little bit, got in that same crouching position, and just kind of crumbled. So I'm wondering if that's a way to kind of get past him. We've talked about for a while, you and I, why don't you just push him down and flatten him?
Yeah, and it's I've seen some fights where he's gotten folded up like an accordion, and I'm like, how did you not tear anything?
Yeah.
Like the weight that some of these guys weigh, and just in comparison to him, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, I'm surprised he hasn't had any major injuries so far. Yeah. But yeah, he's that low kind of fighter. He's going to go for your legs because of his height. And yeah, maybe people are just getting used to that now, where it's like, oh, we kind of know that's what he's going to do, but he's quick. Like, that's the big thing. I don't know if a lot of people are expecting is really how quick he is. So
yeah.
We'll see how Taka Keisho does, because that's another big weight difference between Enho and Taka Keisho.
Yeah, and so, like, Shodai is 184 centimeters, and Enho is 169. So not a huge height difference there, really. It'll be interesting to see that fight. I think Shodai's got a lot to fight for right now, especially like you said, with the potential Ozeki promotion. Mm-hmm. So I definitely have my eye on him going forward the next 8 days.
Yep.
And Asanoyama, of course, being the only other 8-0 other than Hakuho, I'm definitely going to be keeping my eye on him as well. Yeah, I think that about sums up our first 8 days of the July 2020 Basho.
Yeah, do you want to give any prediction on who you think is gonna take it? Or you just want to leave it open for see how it goes?
See, I like how Mataki Umi's been fighting. I think I don't know.
It might just still be too early where it's impossible, but.
I'm gonna say Asanoyama actually. I think he's gonna take it. I don't think Hakuho's been looking really. I mean, that's the easy choice is saying Hakuho.
Yeah, I guess if you had to take Hakuho out of the picture, maybe who?
Yeah, would I would say Asanoyama. Yeah, he's probably going to win this one. And then, again, it seems easy to pick that, but just the way he's been fighting and the long fights that I've seen him in and, you know, the challenging fights that I've seen, he's definitely had way more challenging fights in terms of, like, length and strategy and things like that than Hakuho has. I mean, Hakuho just comes in and dominates most of the time.
Yeah.
But Asanoyama has had adversity to overcome. Yeah. And I think as long as he stays healthy, I think he's got a really good shot at winning it.
Yeah,
Who do you got?
See, Shodai's been performing very well too. I mean, like you said, Hakuho is the easy choice just to go with. But yeah, Shodai's looked really good, and Takeomi's looked really good. I mean, let's say Hakuho and Asanoyama wins. I'd love to see Kota Shoho win. He won Juryo. He's young. He's the youngest. He's, you know, a rookie. I'd love to see him take it. And even at two losses, we've seen crazier things happen with a two-loss guy winning, and you know, if Hakuho loses one and he gets injured, then Hakuho is completely out of the picture. It's completely open. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about guys with three losses now being considered on the leaderboard with both of those guys taking losses. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap this one up. Thanks again for watching. We'll probably have or listening rather. We'll have an end of Basho recording up, and we'll see you then.